The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And on today's program, I'll be talking with Michael Cooney, who is a practitioner of the Uilleann pipes, which is a small type of Irish bagpipes. He will be playing with Irish guitarist Pat Egan on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tonight at 8 o'clock, and he'll be on the second portion of the show. First, though, conductor laureate, former longtime music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, Kenneth Kiesler, is returning to conduct the orchestra for their Holiday Pops concerts tonight in Bloomington at the Center for the Performing Arts and tomorrow at in Springfield at the Sangamon Auditorium, both concerts starting at 8 o'clock and involving a cast of thousands, so to speak. Looking forward to talking with Kent Kiesler coming up very shortly here on Live and Local. Thank you. We just heard music that may or may not be familiar to you. Chances are, unless you have been to concerts by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in years past, you won't have heard these particular arrangements of a couple of traditional Hanukkah melodies or Jewish melodies, Mi Yamalel, and we heard Yamei HaChanukah, both of them set by Aharon Harlop. And the reason you won't have heard them before is because, as I understand, they're actually kind of the property of the Illinois Symphony, courtesy of my next guest, who is Kenneth Kiesler. He is used to be, for a long time, the music director of the Illinois Symphony and is now called their conductor laureate. And he's coming back for the first time to guest conduct the orchestra in their Holiday Pops concerts this weekend. Ken, it's great to talk with you again.
It's great to be with you, Kevin.
So what have you been doing all this time?
All this time.
Where have you been?
I've been hanging out, getting ready for this holiday concert.
For the last 10 years?
Well, it's been a little longer. I left in 2000. My last concert as music director was in April of 2000. I've been for 17 years the director of orchestras at the University of Michigan, where I also teach orchestral conducting. I'm very proud to have an excellent program there. I'm also the director of the conductors program for the National Arts Center Orchestra in Ottawa, Canada, and I direct the Vendôme Academy of Conducting in Paris and the conductors retreat at Madomic in Maine. So I'm doing quite a bit of conducting, teaching, and mentoring. I also teach and work with conductors in Germany and in Berlin and in Vilnius, Lithuania, and in Moscow. So I've been busy, but those places, I go there in London and other places typically for a week or two or three a year, and my main work has been at the University of Michigan. I've also been doing a lot of conducting and recording. I've had, I think since that time, 11 or 12 CDs come out. I just finished a new recording project a few days ago, and that CD, those double CD set will be out in March, so that's been keeping me busy also.
I would not have guessed that it had been 17 years that you were at Michigan, because I remember when you got that gig.
Yeah, 17 years. Five of the years overlapped with my last 5 years here at the Illinois Symphony. I was commuting for 5 years.
So back when you had me as an occasional private student,
yes.
Did you ever actually think that might be such an enormous part of your life? That's more or less what you're dedicated to.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, I tell you, I am still conducting a great deal, but it is true that my teaching career has become a big part of my life, and I love it, and it's very gratifying to see what's going on for my students and where they are and what they're doing. I'm also doing a lot of mentoring of conductors who are very well established, who don't really have a place to go that they can trust or a person they can go to say, you know, things aren't going as well as I would like or as they used to. Do you have any thoughts or what can I do to do things differently and be happier with my own work? You know what, actually, Kevin, when you and I were working together and I was teaching just a few people, that was kind of an experiment on my part. And it was because of you and two or three others that I thought, you know, I think I'm going to do this and I'll give it a shot. So I went to the University of Michigan thinking I'll try it for 3 years, and now it's 17.
Well, I have not been shy, I'll have you know, about telling people when they've asked, oh, who did you study with? I tell them, but I'd say by far the finest conducting teacher I worked with was Ken Kiesler.
Oh, well, I appreciate that very much, Kevin.
Both privately and in a couple of workshop settings when you were doing the what is now called the League of American Orchestras workshops, which they don't do anymore, which I think is really too bad.
Yeah.
But coming to the idea of the mentoring, as you're here as guest conductor in a season in which the symphony is looking for a new music director, and you're considered the music advisor, and you've got all these people who are coming in as candidates mm-hmm. hoping to get the gig, what, if anything, has been your role in choosing the people who are the finalists?
Well, I can tell you a little bit about the process. I've been involved for about a year, maybe a little longer. And the process was that we didn't advertise the position. We put together a list of conductors who are out there, and that list had, maybe 70, 75 names on it. We did a lot of research, and we invited about 30 to apply, and I think about 25 or 27 did. And then we went through quite an extensive process with the search committee and the members of the orchestra and other community members and involved, you know, what we call stakeholders in the symphony. And five wonderful guest conductors were selected. And as you know, three of them have been working with the orchestra already. And each one, and I think this is a great thing for everybody involved, each one of the conductors is coming for 2 weeks. And I think that gives everybody an opportunity to get to know each other better. And so far, only one of them has been working with the orchestra, or I should say worked with the orchestra for 2 weeks. And so there are two more conductors coming in, and there are several more concerts. I was very involved in the programming of the season. Each conductor submitted three programs for each of their concerts, or six total programs, and I worked with them, sometimes suggesting different pieces, but in establishing the programs so that the audience would have a wonderful season, the orchestra, I hope, is having a wonderful season with great repertoire to play, and that the candidates are doing things that they feel very comfortable and feel that show themselves in the best possible way.
And it's nice that they're not only spending 2 weeks with the orchestra, they're in a way spending 2 weeks with different orchestras, the full symphony and the chamber orchestra.
Precisely, yeah. Different kinds of repertoire and different rehearsal circumstances and different acoustics and different, in some cases, personnel as well.
When you identified the large list of 70 or so and then narrowed it to 30 that you wanted to invite to apply, mm-hmm. what were some of the criteria that you considered?
Well, I have to say that I think the search committee did an extraordinary job with this, and the executive director of the orchestra did remarkable work in laying out those criteria, and they were extensive. I'm talking about all sorts of areas that are extra musical or non-musical, and many, many issues or areas, skills related to conducting, leadership and communication and musical acumen. So I think they were, you know, it's too great a list to tell you, but it was several pages. And I'm very pleased to say that I think, without a doubt, that all five of these people who are involved met, if not every one of those qualifications, the very vast majority of them.
Well, I thought it was interesting in looking at the biographies of each of the five that they, for the most part, have a pretty vast experience. Well, I should revise that a little bit. Some of them have vast experience. Some of them have experience with really big orchestras.
Yes.
Including if they don't have a lot of experience overall. I'm thinking of Donato Cabrera, for example, who hasn't conducted all that many orchestras, but good grief, he's working with the San Francisco Symphony already.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's impressive to have that kind of a stable that you can draw from for your
right.
ultimate
well,
music
I think
director.
I agree with you. In fact, when they had the search for the person who replaced me in 2000, there were two qualifications among many others, and one of them was that they had been music director of an organization with I think they did it by budget, say $400,000 or $500,000, I don't remember exactly, and that they had been an associate conductor of a major orchestra for 3 years. This time around, those kinds of qualifications weren't considered. It was more about personal attributes, musical attributes, rather than where they're working. But in order to have the skills that we are looking for, you're more likely not going to be a 23-year-old conductor, and you're more than likely will have had the kind of experience you're talking about with a big orchestra at some time or another.
Well, it was interesting talking to Alistair Willis that he's conducted some major orchestras, sometimes several times, mm-hmm. and but yet when I came down to ask him, so where have you been music director? He said, well, actually, nowhere.
Yeah.
And so this was what he wanted, you know, one of the reasons he wants this particular gig.
Yeah, you know, as you, I know, are aware, and I'm well aware, and people who are in the profession know, there are hundreds of conductors applying for every position that is announced, and many orchestras choose not to announce the position because it's just too much to deal with. There are so many conductors out there who are out of work. Many of them have experience, You know, I think one of the tragedies in the profession is that as people become older and get experience, and say they've been with an orchestra 10 or 12 or 15 years, and it's time for the orchestra to have a new conductor, it's often very difficult for that person to find a new position, especially these days when orchestras are looking for younger conductors. And I think one of the fascinating things about this search is what I was just mentioning about that these are not 23-year-old conductors. And the reason I choose that age is that when Gustavo Dudamel went to Los Angeles at the age of 23 as music director of one of the greatest orchestras in the world, it changed the environment. That's a sea change in the profession. And it's been influencing many, many other cities and other organizations. So for this orchestra to say, we want somebody with some experience, we want somebody who has proven themselves and has the skills we need in all of the various areas that we need them, I think it makes a great statement about the value the community places on the orchestra.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about some of your own mentoring of your present students a little bit in this light. But first, let's play a little bit more music just so people can get don't have to listen to us talk forever here.
Okay, <that's great.
laughs> After all, we are talking about a Holiday Pops concert.
Uh-huh.
You've picked three pieces, I think, settings by Robert Wendell. Bob Wendell, is he somebody you know pretty well, and how did you end up picking these particular pieces?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know him that well. When I was music director of the Illinois Symphony, I did some of his music. I think I did two of these three pieces that we're doing now at that time, at least one of them for sure. The music is very well done. It's usually a little more on the entertaining side than the serious side, and that's good sometimes for part of the program. It's written well. It rehearses pretty easily, and it's very, very effective. And it's a lot of fun. His music is a lot of fun.
Well, here's a tune that is sometimes on the more somber side. I'm hearing this recording as we're as essentially live, as we all are. This is the setting of the Coventry Carol. The orchestra isn't identified here. It's his own recording, and he hasn't identified it. So let's listen. Robert Wendell, his setting of the Coventry Carol. It's one of many pieces that are going to be on the concert by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Tonight at 8 o'clock and Saturday night at 8 o'clock, Saturday in Springfield, Friday in tonight in Bloomington, and conducted by the Conductor Laureate of the ISO, Kenneth Kiesler, my guest on Live and Local. the familiar Coventry Carol as set by Robert Wendell, one of three arrangements of his that will be on the concerts tonight and tomorrow by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, guest conducted by Kenneth Kiesler, who comes back after 11 or so years away, former music director, longtime music director of the orchestra, and my guest here on Live and Local. And Ken, you reminded me as we were listening to that music that this is one of the pieces that will be performed with the ISO jointly with the youth orchestras in the two communities you're playing in, Bloomington and Springfield.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for the members of the orchestra, the professional musicians, to mentor, even if just for a few minutes, some young people, and for the young people to have a chance to sit side by side with a professional musician playing the same music can be very, very inspiring and very educational. And also, there's, you know, it's holiday time, and it's nice to be with kids, and it's nice to be with families, and so it's a wonderful experience to have the kids on stage with us.
And of course, it's a great experience for the kids.
Yes, absolutely.
To sit next to the pros. What do they get rehearsal time, or do they just sit down and go, or how does that work?
We're rehearsing. We rehearse together. The Sangamon Valley Youth Orchestra will be working, does rehearse with the Illinois Symphony, and the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony will, I'm rehearsing them before the concert for a half hour, and they've been rehearsing for weeks, and should be great.
What I wanted to ask you about before we started playing that music, in relative to your own teaching and mentoring, in working with your students at the University of Michigan and also in the various conducting programs around that you have, mm-hmm. what do you tell these students about the real-world job prospects? You know, as we're talking about the music director search with the Illinois Symphony, how do you prepare them for the tough life that they're going to have trying to find a job, any
yeah.
job?
Well, it's a very interesting question. There are a number of facets to the answer. First of all, there are no guarantees, and they know that going in. The second thing, though, and this is particularly challenging for me sometimes, is that because my students have, thankfully, had some success, and many of them are working, the people who are admitted into the program, it's very competitive to enter. I get about 200 applications for every one person I take. They think that it's a meal ticket. You know, you get into the program, you're going to have a career, and that's just not the case, not necessarily the case. And so what we try to do in the conducting program, the one I'm talking about now is the full-time one at the University of Michigan, is to prepare them for life as a music director in these days. In other words, they're not just learning scores and how to communicate with their hands, how to rehearse and perform, which is what I learned when I was in school for a degree, but they're learning about community engagement. They're learning about outreach, about long-range planning, about fundraising, organizational structure, about programming, about all sorts of things that used to maybe be a certain portion of the job, but now are often the major part of the job. So we're trying to prepare them for the eventuality of working. We're also trying to prepare them for the eventuality of not working as a conductor and developing skills that will be useful to them in other aspects of some kind of music-related profession.
Yeah, I'm sure there's many conductors who do face that latter prospect. There's so much time jobless, and they think, well, maybe I better do something else.
Yeah, it's a sad story. I have just a couple of conductors who've worked with me who have never conducted again. And they're not the ones who get the attention from, when the New York Times calls me, it's about somebody who's, making their debut with a major orchestra or opera company, that they don't write the stories about, and there are sad stories about the people who get nowhere. And those are the ones that often get my attention for years afterwards. And we try to do what we can to be of help in any way we can.
I don't remember from the bios, but are any of your students among the candidates for the Illinois Symphony job?
Well, there's one person who did his master's degree with me, which is a two-year program, and he did it a long time ago. So I wouldn't call him one of my students at the moment, but he graduated, I'm guessing, about 10 years ago. And that's Ken Raskin, who did his master's degree in conducting at Michigan.
Yeah, actually, Ken was somebody that I had met at a program that actually you probably were among the teachers at the Conductors Institute in Connecticut.
Yeah, I was
probably
there
that year.
I was there 2 years as a guest teacher, and that's one of the reasons I started the Conductors Retreat in Mendomic. After my second year there, I decided to start my own place, which is now in its 16th year.
And people can see a wonderful video on YouTube that talks about your approach to music making. I actually wrote down one of the things you said there, that music is intended to be a service to humanity. And you're talking about beyond just teaching people how to wave a baton.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's such a, you know, when people ask me, as they often do, what do conductors do and are the players really watching?
And what that's a loaded question.
Doing up there, you know, and there's so much of the job really is not. It doesn't happen on the podium. It happens off the podium, and how one relates to people. And let me just, you know, I could say this. I don't say this very often, but since we've known each other a long time, and since hardly anybody is listening to us, no, I'm just kidding. But just
only about 4,000 or so, Ken.
I think one of the reasons that the biggest reason that I teach some of the things I teach is because I learned from the mistakes I made when I was music director of the Illinois Symphony. I was 25 years old when I started with the orchestra. And we were building from a very small situation into a much larger one. And so there were many successes, and there were also things that could have been done differently. And some of the things that we talk about at Mendomic are the relationship issues with musicians, with each other, with the community, board members, management, and as well as with the composer, I should say. And those are things that I learned both from what I guess you could say constructive lessons and not so constructive ones that were learned later on and became constructive only in retrospect.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Ken, as after all this time, and I'm sure the Illinois Symphony, those who are still in, who were in when you were there, are probably ecstatic to have you back. And the audience will certainly enjoy your way with the music and with the orchestra and with them this weekend. Tonight at 8 o'clock, it's the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts and joining them, the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. And tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield, joined by the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony as well as the Sangamon Valley Community Orchestra and a cast of soloists in a wonderful holiday program. Conductor Laureate, former music director and musical advisor, Kenneth Kiesler, my guest on Live and Local. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
And we'll go out with one of the pieces that's on the program this weekend. This is John Williams' music, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. He's leading the Dallas Symphony in this performance. We heard the Dallas Symphony and chorus. I'm afraid I haven't identified the chorus. Not that it hasn't been identified, but I didn't write it down. With John Williams conducting his own music, it's called Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, and that piece will be on the program with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra tonight in Bloomington and tomorrow night in Springfield. For more information, go to ilsymphony.org. Support for our show today on Live and Local comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign, featuring foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, and gift baskets for the holidays. Also, World Harvest carries fine specialty ingredients like saffron, smoked paprika, truffle salt, grain of paradise, and more. Coming up, a conversation with Michael Piper Cooney, who will be performing with guitarist Pat Egan an traditional Irish music concert tonight at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana on the Piper's Hut concert series. We're certainly fortunate here in central Illinois to have so many different kinds of venues that present music like Irish at the Independent Media Center. The IMC hosts so many different kinds of music as well, like the Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, hosting the Illinois Symphony and many more kinds of things, the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and the Hoagland Center for the Arts also in Springfield. When you tune to Live and Local on WYLL, you hear interviews with musicians and cast members who perform in these venues and in much smaller ones as well. It's certainly always something new, and I hope you find it fresh on Live and Local. Your contributions are what make it possible to bring you the show. If you want to make a contribution right now, it will be very gratefully received, and we would need it by December 31st if you want to take the tax benefit for this year. You can phone with your pledge at 217-244-0025. That's 217-244-0025, or you can contribute online at willpledge.org, willpledge.org. Thanks to all who've contributed this year and during this little mini December pledge drive, and especially any who have supported Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Stay tuned for Michael Cooney. Thank you. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Michael Cooney, Michael Piper Cooney, as he is sometimes known, for the simple reason that he plays the Illan Pipes, which we'll explain in a minute. He's going to be playing, along with guitarist Pat Egan, on the Piper's Hut Concert Series tonight at the Independent Media Center on South Broadway in Urbana. That's in the old post office building right next to Lincoln Square Mall. And the Piper's Hut Concert Series has lots of wonderful Celtic, mostly Irish, but sometimes Scottish musicians and sometimes American musicians playing this kind of music on the series, and they happen to be the next ones on it. And a fairly recent addition to it as well. They're on the road as we're talking to them. So Michael assures me that he is not at the wheel. So I'm glad to know that. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin.
Most of what I'm looking at here, biography on your website, gives the early part of your career, including the major fact that you were raised in a family of pipers. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you just could talk about your beginnings a little bit, and also I'm curious how common it is to be part of a family of pipers.
Well, most of my family actually played the Highland Pipes. They were one of the founding members of a pipe band in our local area in Tipperary in Ireland. And so they grew up with the pipe band tradition, basically. I came along, and my dad was always enamored by the Illan Pipes. So I started off, my family were basically kind of, very much into the Irish culture, not only the music, but the dancing and the singing as well. And so it was kind of a natural progression to start off on an old tin whistle or a penny whistle. And I started that at the age of 9, and I progressed then. At the age of 12, I took up the Illan Pipes, not because I was told to, but because I wanted to. It was a lot easier to sit down and play than to march around the fields and play. So.
And just for our listeners who aren't familiar with some of the terms, the Highland Pipes are the ones that they're probably most familiar with when somebody plays the bagpipes.
Exactly. Yeah, they're a much louder instrument, Kevin. They're basically they're an old military instrument, I suppose. That's the best way I can put it to you. Like they're made for marching to and made to be played outdoors. And whereas the Illan Pipes were developed as more of an indoor instrument, as we'd say at home, like a parlor instrument that could be played in a sitting room or a living room, and it wouldn't be too loud. You know, it's much quieter than the ones we march around with.
So they're sometimes called the small pipes.
No, the small pipes are actually more. They're more relative to. Kind of the north of England and the lower lands of Scotland.
Oh, that is a different instrument then.
Oh, absolutely. The Illan Pipes are basically indigenous to Ireland. They were first made in Ireland. I'm told anyway by the historians, like in the 1700s, they developed them because the actual Highland Pipes, as we were just talking, were banned by to be played in Ireland. That was one of the reasons that the instrument was. That's for indoors, so they're very much associated with Ireland. There's the thing about pipes is that all over, like in the British Isles and even in all the way in through Western and Eastern Europe, there's several different types of pipes. You know, so the Illan Pipes is the one that we kind of came up with. So.
So you were got an early start on the whistle. You played some fiddle. And probably do.
I torment the fiddle, Kevin, and it torments me. Put it that way. So,
a lot of people.
My main instruments would be the tin whistle and the Illan Pipes. That's what I'm known for, to be honest. So
you said you got interested on your own in the Illan Pipes. You didn't have to be forced to do them. What was the attraction?
Yeah.
What did you like about them?
The sound mainly, and. You know, I'm the oldest in my family, so when I was growing up, my dad actually had stopped playing, you know, and he was trying to raise a family, and I remember I whistled around in the house one Christmas, and I just happened to pick it up. I mean, he had some old recordings laying around, and when he wasn't around, I'd take his tape recorder out and listen to some stuff and try and learn, you know. And it was, I don't know, something I've always just found it a natural thing to do, you know.
Let's let our listeners have a listen to the solo Ilan Pipes. This is from your recent CD, just from last year, called Just Piping, so it's only you on it, and a tune called The Humours of Ballylochlan. First, did I say that okay?
Yes, absolutely you did. Yeah, that's fine, Kevin. Yeah.
And is this a traditional tune, or is this one of your own?
It would be very much so. It'd be one of the older tunes. I used to listen to the piping of Willie Clancy, who was a marvellous piper from West Clare, and I kind of based my version of the tune on the way he used to play it. But it's a very, very old, one of the older tunes in our music, you know. So
it's Michael Cooney playing the Ilan Pipes. He's going to be with guitarist Pat Egan at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tonight, starting at 8 o'clock. And we've got him on the phone here on Live and Local. Called The Humours of Ballylochlan, Michael Cooney the Piper on Live and Local. And so that's the full pipes, where you have the drone and you have the chanter.
Yes.
And
yes.
How...
Yes?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to ask, how common is it for somebody to just play the solo pipes in a performance situation?
Well, the instrument itself originally was just played solo with actually no accompaniment, and even up to the, you know, I suppose middle 70s, even pipers didn't actually even play together. They all had their own kind of solo show going, and it's kind of the feature of the instrument, because you've got a chanter where you play the melody, and then you've got three drones, which is a kind of the constant sound you hear in the background, and then you've got the regulators, which are basically chords that you play with the side of your hand. So it's an instrument that's kind of, you know, it's made to be played solo. That's the best way I can put it to you, Kevin. But since the folk revival in the 70s, it's become associated with a lot of other instruments, and it's really come a long way. In my time, playing them. You know, they've become they're going through a bit of a renaissance, to be honest about it. There's some great things going on all over the country with pipes, and some great young and pipers and some great pipe makers in the United States now, and it's great to see, because I remember a day where people had no clue what I was up to, you know. So I actually had one person ask me one time, where do you put the batteries in that thing, you know?
Oh, seriously?
So, no, it's to just answer your question, they're kind of an instrument built to be played solo, you know. So,
but more,
there's no harm to play with other people either, if we use that word.
So it's maybe I got the question backwards, where it's becoming more common to play them with some sort of accompaniment, whether it's
absolutely
just
yeah,
the guitar yeah. or maybe as part of a whole band.
Yeah, exactly. They're used from everything to from an orchestra nowadays, and even, you know, down to whatever, you know. Pat and myself, you know, we go around as a duet. Pat's a fine guitar player and singer, and you know, it's great. It's nice to have someone there sitting beside you, you know, going through the same pain, you know.
Well, Irish music is all about pain, isn't it?
No, not at all. It's actually very fun.
Well, I said that, of course, facetiously, but when you say it's fun, which, of course, I think most people
yes.
probably think it is, aside from
yes.
the beautiful and sometimes haunting airs mm-hmm. that you do.
Yes. Well, the airs are really a whole different, you know, they're a different mood to it, because most of the music we play is dance music, you know. It's kind of, you know, it was originated from the old house at home, where people would get together and play music and just dance in the house all night, you know, and long before bars were, you know, in the country and all that. So, but the airs are kind of where a lot of the dance music came from, you know, originally. The airs were the first to be there, because they were composed about, you know, events and in our history and about people in our history. And a lot of the airs were composed in honor of them. And the dance music kind of progressed from that. They are definitely a kind of a sadder mood, you know.
Well, here's an example. This is also from the Just Piping CD. The difference, so we played a dance tune earlier, and this one an air. The other difference between the sound that you're going to hear now is that this one, Sean Dwyer, you don't use the drones of the instrument. You just use the chanter.
Yeah. I don't know, for some reason I decided to do it that way, Kevin. I thought the tune was haunting enough on its own. Need too much, you know. They didn't need too much sound. Just I wanted to really put the melody itself there. And Sean Dwyer was a rapparee, which would be, I suppose, nowadays we would call like a highwayman, you know. And he was sought after by the authorities for years, and they never caught him. And so when he passed away, that tune was composed in his honor, and there's also words to it as well. So it was one of my uncle's favorite tunes. That's why I put it down.
Well, it's sort of using the tradition of the solo instrument playing an air, whether it's sometimes a solo voice, might be a solo flute, and here it's the solo chanter from the Illan Pipes, played by Michael Cooney from his CD called Just Piping. He'll be with guitarist Pat Egan at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tonight on the Piper's Hut concert series. Thank you. Michael Cooney playing the solo pipes, in fact, only playing part of the Illan pipes, just the chanter, the part where the fingers do the walking, so to speak, without the drone, which is the other familiar aspect of any bagpipe. Michael Cooney with Pat Egan will be at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local, and we appreciate your joining us for the show. We appreciate your support of the show and always appreciate your listening. On the show, we do welcome voices of musicians and other performers who are throughout our listening area. And with the program, we try to give you a timely picture of what's happening in your arts community, some insight into the people who perform, such as you've heard from Kenneth Kiesler today and also from Michael Cooney. Your pledge of financial support makes these important community connections possible. You can call in your pledge right now to 217-244-0025. The number 217-244-0025, or you can contribute online at willpledge.org, willpledge.org. And to get the tax benefit for this year, of course, your contribution must be received by December 31st. Our program today is made possible in part not only by our listeners, but also by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to visit the Promenade Gift Shop for unique gift ideas. More information about upcoming events is at krannertcenter.com. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings this weekend in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Friday from 4 to 7 p.m., it's a Cabernet Sauvignon tasting, and Saturday from 3 to 6:30 p.m. features a champagne tasting, followed by live music from 7 to 9 with the klezmer band Don't Ask. Here are just a few of the many holiday concerts happening this weekend. The Hoagland Center in Springfield is presenting a show called The Holly and the Ivy tonight and tomorrow at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. It's the Christmas Spectacular at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, 2 and 7:30 today and 2 and 7:30 tomorrow as well, and 2 o'clock on Sunday. David Howie is at Silver Creek Restaurant in Urbana this evening at 5:30. The Temptations are at the Peoria Civic Center tonight at 8 o'clock. Yes, those Temptations. The Civic Chorale performs an American Family Christmas at the Caterpillar Performing Arts Center in Washington, Illinois this evening and tomorrow evening at 7:30. Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribe are at Robbie's Restaurant in Springfield this evening at 5:30. The Jeff Helgeson Quartet is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5. And it's the Milliken Holiday Jazz Program with the Faculty Jazz Sextet at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur tomorrow evening at 7:30. Check your local listings for many more events. Go out and see something this weekend. This is 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois.